This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4, Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Got Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, later in the hour. Ray Ferraro will join us here in a moment. The Raptors with a win last night, and you'll take it. You know, the fourth quarter, it was holding on for dear life, and Charlotte's been, you know, a pretty good team this year. And
hanging around, yeah.
Hanging around, and they were on the back-to-back. Gordon Hayward wasn't playing. And listen, this Raptors team, there are about five or six guys that Nick Nurse can trust and likes and is going to play a ton. And we know it's Van Vliet, Lowry, Ananobi, Siakam. Feels like Chris Boucher. I think Norman Powell will get there. He's been very inconsistent this year. But those are guys that are going to play. They're going to play a lot of minutes. And then everyone else on the team is going to filter in and out. And I don't have faith in anyone else on the team. Stanley Johnson's been fine. You know, he's stepped in, defends, and gives you a little bit of size when needed. But for the most part, it's five guys, give or take. They're going to
jersey
play
fillers.
All night. Exactly. And
other
that's
guys
the team
are,
right now.
Yeah, they're not guys that are, front and center. You mentioned you've got your core there and guys that Nick Nurse can throw out there, and then you've got a bunch of jersey fillers. And that's I'm actually being disrespectful.
You're filling out a roster, though.
I don't mean to be, but that's what they are. Instead of, like, what we've been used to. Yeah, we've been used to the last couple years, even a little bit farther back. Obviously, we've been spoiled with the amount of wins, and especially regular season. This team is, 50-plus wins and gets it done, and they've got attitude and really likable team. This team isn't dislikable. It's just – or unlikable. It's just they're kind of blah. You're watching them, and you're like, all right.
Well, when you consider, what they were doing when they won that championship a couple of years ago.
Right.
They had Van Vliet and Ibaka and Norman Powell coming off the bench.
Right.
Like, those were your guys. So you had a guy in the backcourt coming off the bench in Van Vliet. You had a front court presence in Ibaka coming off the bench. And Norman Powell, when he was hot, and he's, he went 1-for-8 from three last night. When he will jack shots, whenever he's out there, he's confident, he's going to put it up. If he's hitting shots, he is a game changer. He is a sixth man award nominee type player. So
right.
You had him coming off the bench. And to say nothing of, other options deeper down, but that's how far it has fallen off here, where Fred's got to play, Ibaka's not here anymore. Powell's kind of depending on what's going on with other guys in the lineup and who they're playing against, might get starting minutes, might come off the bench. But it's been a lot of turnover, and we're well aware of it, and it's not been a great start. But you take the wins where you can get it right now at 3-8, and you move on. The Leafs are back in action tonight. Ray will join us here in a moment. Ray's calling the game on TSN tonight. And Freddie Anderson will go. Sounds like Jack Campbell will go tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to me. I'm not sure it necessarily matters, really, but – and the same lineup, too. Sheldon Keefe spoke about it today. We were wondering about this yesterday, if they would mix up some things, maybe take Barabanov out of the lineup. He only played 5 minutes the other night. Maybe you change your D pairings. And Sheldon Keefe made what I think is an appropriate comment, saying, we haven't played any exhibition games. We've barely had camp. You got to give them a few games to ease into it, knock some rust off, and then maybe you take
That's fair.
From there.
It's fair. It get some comfort level going, get some chemistry. We talked about it at length. Montreal, new faces, a lot of turnover. Can you get that chemistry going? Well, the Leafs have new faces and lots of turnover, too. Not from the core, but the players around that core. So allow them to settle in, too. Barabanov, I didn't think he looked particularly great the other night, but you got to give him an opportunity. Exactly. You got to give him an opportunity to settle in and play. Same thing with the bottom of that decor. Like, it's one night and it was opening night. So let's see what things look like a week from now. And the one thing that I think we've got to get used to, they play tonight. Well, they play tomorrow. And guess what? They play Monday too.
Yep.
Like, there's a lot of games coming around. They've got to get points here, and it's not urgency. It's just reality, because Montreal's a different team. Like, they're a balanced team, but they're not top heavy with skill and just kind of make, they don't look like Edmonton. Like, that's where you know, you've got Ottawa, which is going to be a hardworking team, but then around the corner, it's Winnipeg. It's, you know, it's different looks of teams that are coming around the corner. So you got to make hay when you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it continues tonight. The Leafs are in Ottawa. You can watch the game on TSN. Here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro, live from Ottawa here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. You were just in the rink for 3 weeks at the World Juniors, so it's not like you're not familiar with it, but you haven't been in an NHL rink in a long time. What do you think that experience will be like tonight?
Man, it's all so weird, Brian. Like, it's, you know, like when somebody scores, everybody, you know, on the ice is happy, and you can actually hear the guys talking to themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so weird. You know, like, good play, hey, good pass. You know who scored because you hear everybody say his name. Like, it's the all weirdest right. thing. And so I don't think I buy the, you know, Wayne Simmonds fight changed the entire game around. I kind of think the two power play goals did. However, in a game where there's no anything in the building, you have to manufacture your own excitement. And I think that's where I locked in a little more on Simmonds the other night, was that there is nothing. Like, they can play whatever music they want between whistles. There's no atmosphere. There's no zip. And so you got to create it once in a while yourself. That's what it's going to be like tonight. I mean, like, just think, like, this play, Ottawa hasn't had much to cheer about for a long time. They're so excited for Tim Stützle and to watch him play. And it's his birthday. And it's his NHL debut. And it's their first game. And me and Gord are going to be in the rink.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No one's there.
Yeah, that's where we were talking about it last hour before you came on is, you know, Ottawa's got something to talk about now. I mean, Stützle is, by all accounts, you know, looks like the real deal. Now, I don't know where the expectation level is. That's my concern because, you know, the league sorts you out pretty quick and you have to grow into the league. Is he a guy that you know, from watching him, do you think he'll hit the ground running, or is there going to be a learning curve for somebody like that? I mean, Lafreniere, you know, the Islanders just strangled them last night, so there was no room for anybody to move last night for that game. But, you know, what do you see the capabilities and what's the expectations for a guy like Stützle early on?
I don't ever have too high expectation for an 18-year-old because, holy smokes, man, it's going to be hard, right? Like, it's going to be really hard. And everybody's going to be interested in how he's going to do. I mean, the players on the other team. So they're all paying attention to him, even though he doesn't know who any of them are. They all know who he is. I think he's got Patrick Kane in his game. He wants to hold the puck. He can create with it. He makes people around him dangerous because he can find them. He can score. Like, Jamie, I don't think there's anything they can hand him that he can't handle. However, he's still 18. And so he's playing tonight, with Dadonov, who's a really good player who came from Florida, and Derek Stepan. Stepan's best years are behind him. He's not fast. And so, like, Stutz was the engine on the line. He's 18 years old. We talked to DJ Smith this morning and, you know, about expectations, and he kind of laughed right away. He's like, you know, we're trying to keep a lid on them, but it's pretty hard. You know, everybody wants to see him. Nobody really wants to see the Senators. They want to see Tim Stützle.
Right.
Right? Like, he's the headliner. But one other thing. He's not going to be like Kirill Kaprizov is in Minnesota. Like, Kaprizov had the big night last night, a goal and two assists. He's 23.
Yeah.
Right? He got drafted 5 years ago, exactly. Which is incredible. And now here, you know, Stützle got drafted, you know, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a young kid. Yeah, he is. And I am looking forward to seeing him play, though. I would sit there with the same mentality, and I'm not a Senator fan, I'm not from Ottawa, but I am looking forward to seeing him in particular play. And as for the Leafs, prior to you coming on, we mentioned that Sheldon Keefe decided not to change his lineup for the game tonight. That might happen tomorrow. It's a back-to-back. You may do it anyway just to keep some guys fresh and filter some guys through, but his reasoning was that they haven't had any exhibition games. It was a quick camp. If you're committed to this lineup and you believe that this is one that's going to give you the best chance to win, you kind of have to give them credit and give them a chance to go at it, you know, at least a couple games in a row, right? Knock some rust off. That seems to make sense to me.
It does, for sure. We talked to him. Gordon and I got a chance to talk to him this morning, and he said he had to kind of check himself on the bench to not start juggling lines the other night, in particular the Kerfoot line that had a really kind of sluggish first couple of periods. He had to check himself and say, hey, wait a minute, it's the first game here. Like, these guys are just getting into it. And he felt like the pace was so fast that it led to a lot of uneven play or disconnected play. And so his patience is to get these guys rolling a little bit. The one thing that is important to remember here, I think we all have, at least I think we do, we all have in our mind, okay, they're going to move guys in and out from the taxi squad. Each move has cap implications. And so sometimes they're going to want to get a guy there, but they just can't. They don't have the money at that point to do it. And so it'll be, because you can't just take somebody off your roster and stick them on the taxi squad. They got to go through waivers. And so that, I think that is a real interesting point to how teams are going to be able to move guys back and forth. Because the Leafs, even though they have a small NHL roster, they don't have cap space. So they can't just add $750,000 in cap space willy-nilly, because that might be $7,000 for the day. And that $7,000 doesn't sound like much, but it adds up pretty quickly for a team that might want to save their cap space to make a move somewhere down the road.
Absolutely. And these are all the inner workings of the most unique season we're probably ever going to experience. Wow. You know,
well, Brian, just look at this. Like, Edmonton's down a goalie, right? Mike Smith's out for a couple of weeks. Everybody's saying, oh, they got to go get a goalie. Well, if they get a goalie, he's got to quarantine.
Yeah.
And so he can't play for 2 weeks. Well, if Smith's only out three, then are you going to go and trade assets to get a guy to sit in a hotel room for 2 weeks? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so you get kind of stuck, right?
Yeah, you're stuck.
And who's available right now that you believe that would be either an upgrade or, like you say, help out? Like, Jimmy Howard, for example, hasn't played. Jimmy Howard had a 4.0 goals against last year.
Did he win a game noodles last year? Did he
win one last
year?
He might have got one
near
the end.
I think he got one late. I think he snuck in a W late.
Now, listen, Detroit was terrible. So but Jimmy's not a Greek god to start off with as far as being built. He's, you know, built like me. And you know, that's a guy, you don't know if he's in shape. Ryan Miller's a guy. Like, there's old goaltenders out there that you could be looking at, but you have no idea if they're in shape, if they've been skating. And to your point, Ray, the quarantine. So it doesn't matter what you do. Even if you could get Ryan Miller on a private plane into Edmonton, well, he's got to sit in a hotel room for 2 weeks. And then, you know, it's a challenge. And Forsberg just gets picked up by Winnipeg, who lost Eric Comrie. So it's kind of...
I'd love to be in the room with the GMs right now, because we always just assume that everyone has it together. I think this applies to every walk of life, you know, that you're not familiar with. This guy, oh, this doctor, of course, he knows everything. He never makes a mistake. Oh, that dentist. You know, there are GMs that put forth the front. We're on top of it. You know, mistakes are already being made, and they're going to be made in the future. Doesn't mean we'll ever find out. But there's probably so much panic behind the scenes about, you know, putting the wrong guy on waivers. What's going to happen? Not knowing the quarantine rules, like, somehow got the wrong information.
Well, Brian, I was just going to say, what are the chances 31 general managers are all up to date with the local health organization bylaws and rules?
No chance. I don't know the bylaws in Toronto, and I live here. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Noodles, just think, if you had burned off those four suspended games, it could be you.
That's right. Back in there, flying back to Edmonton. Hometown boy returns to his hometown team.
Not a chance.
That would be outstanding.
I tried skating out.
Go ahead.
I tried skating on the outdoor rink the other day, and I felt my groins were about to fall off. And I had no gear on. I had done nothing, and I could barely stride out just a regular stride. There's no chance. No chance I would even be able to look at a puck right now. It'd be awful.
See, because the first thing I thought of is Gord tells this story about one of his teachers, I think it was in grade 8, was Dave Dryden. And Dave Dryden signed somehow with the Oilers, who were in the WHA. He's like, he was playing for the Oilers, and the next day he was teaching our math class. Like, this could be you, Noodles.
I honestly, like, no joke, I grew up in Edmonton. I had an Edmonton Eskimo as my substitute teacher.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to pull up his name. I can't remember. It was Blake somebody. And
I've
he
heard
was
those
a
stories.
Monster.
Yep.
A monster. And same thing, like, you know, Wednesday game or whatever game it was, and, like, he's in our class on Thursday yelling at us to quiet down.
You see it with lacrosse players a lot. Like, lacrosse, they make a decent amount of money, but a lot of times they just fly in for the game, you know, fly in for the weekend, and then they go back to their usual job. And it's like, yeah, you're this guy plays in Denver, but he's working in Pickering at, like, a you know, kindergarten class.
Well, I'll tell you,
that's crazy.
If you're a substitute teacher and you're one of those guys, you're not getting hassled like other teachers are.
No chance.
Nobody's
no.
messing around with them.
You're putting the law down pretty quickly. That McDavid goal last night, he just adds it to his repertoire, where it's like, you know, it's coming. About every 10 games, he's going to give you one that no one else in the league can give you. Like, it feels like that's kind of where he's at with his career. He had, I think, the goal of the year last year, or real close to it anyway, when he danced Morgan Rielly in Toronto. It was a spectacular goal. And that just the stops and starts last night for him to cut into the middle of the ice, get it off. And Noodles, you were saying it kind of maybe picked up on a Matthews release or something.
I don't
we
know.
Talked
maybe,
about that during the offseason.
Yeah, like maybe even Ray weigh in this on this. Like, Matthews and McDavid skate together, and I heard Matthews saying, like, it was kind of cool to train with another high-end athlete. I've noticed things, for example, in McKinnon's game that maybe, you know, Sid and him have had, like, an off, you know, off-the-record conversation. What do you do here? What do you do there? And it just, for me, just slightly, because you can't shoot like Matthews, but maybe there was something where McDavid was watching Matthews in practice, because the way he cut to the middle, but it was the release, like the release point in stride. Now, he's able to do that, and he's such a talented player, but it just looked a little bit different for me, the release. Not the result and the speed to get there and all of that. That's McDavid. But when you're around other players, I know in playing with other goaltenders, like, I would pick up on a couple things. Like, I couldn't play like Kiprusoff, but there was one or two things I could look at and be like, eh, maybe I could try that, add that to my toolbox. I wonder if there was something that McDavid picked up from Matthews on release point, or, you know,
well,
just
got it off
the
quick
puck
last
placement.
Night. Like, he, yeah. he got
well,
into the middle of the ice
what
and
I know
snapped it.
I don't remember McDavid coming down the wing and pulling into the middle like that. I generally remember his rushes where he gets outside the D and then just drives to the net.
Right.
And so that pull-up shot Matthews does. And so I wouldn't discount it at all. I mean, you know, it's funny. Lots of us could look at other players and say, hey, that's a cool move. I could never do it. But those guys might be able to watch each other and steal a little bit. Another idea. But just think, he's doing that on the fly. Hey, Noodles. Like,
yeah.
He's like, he sees something. First of all, Edler's backing up so far and so fast, I thought he was going to end up outside the rink.
Terrifying.
Like, can you imagine that coming down? But my favorite part of the play, if you look at it again, Tanner Pearson's the forward, and McDavid's outside of Pearson, and it's almost like Pearson hears his parents calling for dinner. He turns the other way. Like, he can't even get – he's not even close.
Wow.
Just watch it on the highlight again, and you're like, there's a guy that realized his limitations in that moment. And he's like, well, I hope the guy behind me has him.
I don't know if you guys saw this. I picked up on it right away, and Jason Gregor put it out on Twitter this morning, but I was laughing because Draisaitl saucered that back, and Tyson Barrie thought it was for him. He was trying to bat it out of the air. If you go back and look at the play, yeah. Draisaitl saucers it back. I think Barry thought that that pass was for him, and Draisaitl just put too much English on it, because you see Barry stop and turn back thinking, oh, I missed this, and McDavid goes wheeling by him at a million miles an hour. It was a set play for Draisaitl to McDavid. It's just that Barry wasn't in on the meeting.
Right,
it was kind of funny.
He missed that email link.
Yeah, it was just, if you actually go back and look at that replay, it's so funny because Barry's body language is like, oh, man, I just missed this pass. But then McDavid's got it, and he just goes wheeling by him. And, I mean, Barry's going to get points. He got one last
just
night.
Just being around.
By osmosis, exactly.
Yeah, just being around.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look at so the first night, I think this is something to watch too this year, is with all the back-to-backs against the same teams. You know, Vancouver plays a really good game the first game. Edmonton didn't. You know, Edmonton gets untracked in the second game. Vancouver's a little bit sloppier, and you get a split. And I wonder how many times it's going to be where one team wins both games. It doesn't feel like it would happen a lot, but man, Vancouver, they get the first game, and now, you know, they're like, man, we got a chance to get two out of here.
Yep.
And poof, it was gone. 4 points for Draisaitl. You know, McDavid's hat trick, Nugent Hopkins with a couple of goals, and, you know, see you later.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that is going to have somewhat of a playoff feel to it, right? Like, it's almost like we're on the road for the first two games. We got game one. If we get game two and we're going home up 2-0, like, it's probably going to feel similar, even though you're going home to play a completely different team and it's the regular season. And, you know, the other game in the country last night was Winnipeg-Calgary, and it was the Patrick Laine show, and we discussed this in the last hour, right? Where I think it's a positive for Winnipeg either way if he plays well. You know, if he plays really well, and he was determined last night, he looked great, he scored two beautiful goals. If he still wants out and he's playing well, then you're going to force a team to meet your price. And you can probably adjust your price because he's young, under control, and he looks that good. And if he's playing well and he's mixing in, it's only one game. It doesn't mean he's going to do this consistently. But all of a sudden, he starts feeling better about his own placing on the team, maybe gets some more minutes, maybe plays with a guy he wants to play with. It wouldn't be the first time that, you know, a player changes his mind. Maybe he wants to stick around in Winnipeg. You know, it gets messy if he's awful. And then Maurice turns on him. Then he goes public. And then it's like, we got to get rid of this guy, and we're going to get pennies on the dollar.
Well, I think it looks a lot different with Paul Stastny there. You know, like you know, he feels, I'm sure, better about his place with Stastny in the middle. Last year, you know, Brian Little just had a disaster, whatever last year was. Like, he had a disastrous year health-wise. His game had started to slip. You know, and so they're, you know, he's clearly on the second group. And this year it doesn't feel so much like the second group, because now that line includes Kyle Connor, who I think is, next to Scheifele, is their best all-around player. Like, Connor is really, really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now Laine's playing with Connor, and he's got Stastny there, and all of a sudden you don't feel like you're left out in the woods a bit. Like, this could work. Sure, why not? And if it doesn't, you know, you're not getting a second-round pick for him. He looked unreal last night. That overtime goal, I can't remember him pushing the pace like that. Like, he, you know, Goudreau and Monahan had their heads down. Like, they were hustling back, and he didn't get caught.
That's what stood out to me, Ray, is previous years he would have faked moving up ice, then looped back. You know, that's what he would have done. He would have done the loop back and tried to sauce a pass across the ice. He just put his head down and said, catch me if you can.
It's not even confidence, though. Don't you think he looked like, I don't know, in past years, but past years he looked out of shape and looked tired and not engaged some nights. Because I believe he's a guy who got by on his talent his whole career. And then all of a sudden you get to the NHL and you have to learn how to work every night, and it's your job. And young players can do that, but there's a year or an off season where the light goes on and you're like, hey, not only am I a good player, I'm in shape and I believe that I can be a good player. Like, that was a moment for me last night. Like, I don't know if he's in shape or not. I know people are talking about his salad after the game.
That's quite something.
Yeah, I mean, he had the salad going on and the stash. Like, this guy is just something else.
He's loving life.
He's a fan. It was. To me, that was a great play by him, and it was a confident play, and he's not short of confidence.
And it looked different. It looked different.
Yeah, it just looked different.
From the past with him.
Yeah, you're right.
That was a good game, too. Noodles, by the way, you had to love that save Markstrom made where it looked like he was on training wheels back there.
Yeah,
all over.
but this is why I always say this, and I don't know if people should pay attention to this. A lot of times a goaltender has to make an amazing save because they're not in the right spot.
And oh, yeah, Markstrom, he knew it too, though.
He created his own problem back there. He's behind the net trying to shuffle it, falls down, and then all of a sudden he's in the front. Like, the look on Scheifele's face when he thought he had a freebie. And then he rips it out of the air. Yeah, people like save of the year. Absolutely, it's save of the year. All he had to do was stop the puck behind the net and get back to the net. Like, you create your own problem. So, you know, so I chuckle sometimes because, believe me, I've been in that situation, no man's land, except for I'd fumble back to the net, fall down, and it would go in the net instead of ripping it out of the air like Markstrom.
Yeah, well, I'm always good for good goalie comedy. So that looked good.
Well, we'll see what we got tonight. Matt Murray. Making his debut, and Freddie Anderson going. And you can watch the game on TSN. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a great weekend of hockey, football. I mean, there's a lot cooking in the sports world. So enjoy it. Back in the building tonight. We'll catch you on TSN.
Talk to you later, boys. Everybody looking after O. Is he going to be okay? Or?
Yeah, we're a little concerned about him. Like, I think he's going to make an appearance later because we're gambling. He's a degenerate, and he's feeling good about his NFL pick. So he wants to make sure that he's looking over everything and that it's all in the up and up. So I think he'll be on around 6:25, but we're not sure about him. We checked in on him, and I think he's doing okay. But
we envisioned him leaving the hospital in a wheelchair with a head bandage on for some reason. And somebody sent us a GIF. I think it was Mark that sent us a GIF. Remember OJ and the Naked Gun when he was in the wheelchair?
Yeah.
And they wheeled it out, and the wheelchair went down the stairs. And, you know, that's what O
that
looks
was the
like right
now. Leaving the hospital. Yeah. So
we'll get to him soon. Have
we'll
a good one,
out.
Boy.
All right, buddy. There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Yeah, I guess O would have been on the panel tonight too. It's a TSN game.
I think
so.
Johnny is. I believe Johnny is. I'm sure, you know, Pooley for sure. But
something's happening. He's not rolling into the panel. There's no way he's doing 4K under the lights. Coming out of surgery.
Awesome.
There's no chance of that happening. No. But I think we might hear from the O Dog in about an hour, and we'll hear from Al's brother too. I guess we have to determine. I had first pick last week, so I guess it's fair that they pick first this week. And then next week I'll get the first pick, and then for the Super Bowl they'd get the pick.
Sure.
That kind of sucks. Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll come up with some rules because I'm down. Technically I'm even based on the merits of gambling. When O said if you get Jerry King trending online, I'm going to wipe out the debt. So I should be even. It shouldn't really matter what happened last week. But I'm bigger and better than that, so I'm willing to accept that I'm in the hole. So we'll find out. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif will join us at 6:05.
That's
looking
cool.
Forward to that. That's going to be a great chat with him. And Al's brother in about an hour, Scott Mitchell on the Jays, missing out on DJ LeMahieu and what it means for their offseason a little bit later in the hour. And James Harden's in Brooklyn, and he's talking. And Kyrie Irving was supposed to be back tomorrow, but it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. We'll tell you more about that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so the reports were indicating that Kyrie Irving would return tomorrow. And I hope that wasn't intended to be some celebration. Like, I could see it being the case, especially with the media down there in Brooklyn. You know, always, it's so great to have him back. Well, where's he been? He decided to just take off. But now there's a report out there that I just saw momentarily. He probably won't play tomorrow. And I don't even necessarily think it has anything to do with COVID protocols. It's that he's out of shape now.
Yeah.
So imagine this guy bolts on the team. He's been gone for over a week. Decides I'm coming back and then gets into the gym and realizes, actually, I haven't been doing anything and I can't get up and down the court. So I have to miss more time to, you know, continue to work out and stuff. And and that might have been based on the health and safety protocols, not being able to get in or whatever. But he's not playing tomorrow, but James Harden will be there. So Harden and Durant playing Orlando tomorrow.
There was a pretty funny GIF going around online about you remember the scene where the team in Rudy comes in and puts the jerseys
the jersey
on the desk.
Now for Rudy, yep.
Did you see the one for Harden?
No, I didn't see that.
So it was like, it said something, the caption was like, every stripper in New York City walking in and putting down their dress or putting down a G-string or whatever for Harden.
Yeah, for Harden, because he's in town. They know
exactly,
what's coming.
Exactly, yeah. I was kind of laughing because people are very creative. So it was also pointed out, like, Texas is a kind of a tax-free state. Like, he's going to pay a lot more money working in that area, right?
Oh, yeah, in New York, for sure. Yeah, he's making $43 million or something. I think he can... He shaves off half of that. He's still living a pretty good life.
No, you're right. It's just you go from a tax-free state to, you know, add on another 7 or 8% on their, you know, per mil. Like, that's a chunk.
Oh, it's going to add up for sure. It's going to add up. And, some of the – like, the internet's always great in these type of moments when you've got a circus on your hands and you've got a team that is highly unlikable and they haven't even really come together yet. Like, Kevin Durant is a – his talents are – desirable. They're very captivating. I love watching him play. I don't love the makeup of Kevin Durant. I didn't like that he left Oklahoma City for Golden State and then complained when people called him out on that. You know, what do you call me out for? It's like, well, you joined a 73-win team to go get a ring, and now you're mad that people are saying, nah, it's kind of weak. And the burner account stuff, he always seems to be complaining, and he's just he's just dour. He's just never, you know, just there's something about him. It's like, come on.
I don't know why. Maybe you have a different outlook, but who cares if he joined a super team? Like, he's a great player. Like, if I got an opportunity to join a stud of a team and be a difference maker and basically the cherry on top, go ahead. Isn't that where you play sports, to win?
You don't play sports to win, but you do. Don't you have some faith that the team that you're currently on, who was in an NBA Finals and was up 3-1 on Golden State, has an opportunity to do some things too? You had Russell Westbrook with you. You had other guys with you at that point.
Do you think that if he would have stayed, they would have won?
No, I'm not convinced they would have. And listen, he doesn't. I don't think he needs to apologize. He doesn't need to explain. What I'm saying is, don't get your back up against the wall when people are saying, you know, you went chasing for the ring and you took the easiest way out to get it.
Right.
That is just factual. Like, that is not, it's not, you can't argue that he went to a team that won 73 games.
Yeah, you're right.
And he steps on that court and they were unbeatable. Like, you couldn't beat them. And sure enough, they run off 2 straight titles. Maybe would have had a third if he was healthy. I mean, who knows? And who cares in Toronto? Because the Raptors were the ones to put up the fence and stop that three-peat, and we benefited greatly here in Toronto. So I'm not complaining about the whole scene. But what I'm saying is there were I think legitimate, not even criticisms, just pointing out that fact. You know, you were a great player on a very good team, borderline great team in Oklahoma City. You jumped on just to get that ring. Pointing out the facts. Don't complain that people are pointing out that reality. And I always felt like that's what he was doing. And that's why he had the burner accounts to go after people that were calling the move weak or whatever. And it gets back to the whole – and everything comes back to LeBron versus Jordan. And that has always been the biggest issue that LeBron has had when trying to make his case for greatest of all time, that he's hopped around. You know, he's moved around, and specifically going to Miami was chasing it. And Jordan never did that. And Kevin Durant did as well. So I don't have a hate on for Durant. There's just, you know, the makeup is,
it just seems thin. Like,
it's
a guy like that,
it's a little bit weak. It's not an alpha dog kind of vibe.
Right. Like
Kevin Durant,
like, what does he care what some pigeon, you know, or a bot, that's the word. Is that what it's called? A bot.
A bot, you know, online.
Bot with zero followers says, like, he shouldn't care. You know what I mean? Like, I think you develop relationships with people online that are reasonable. The people who aren't reasonable, you mute or you block them and you move on. Like, you know, that's it. Like, and a guy like that who's so high profile, what does he care? Like, that's thin skinned. Like, that's really it.
Exactly. Like, you're doing something at the highest profile level in sports. You're Kevin Durant. Everyone recognizes you. Everyone knows you. You're a superstar. You've won an MVP at that point, second overall in the draft. And everyone knows Golden State. And everyone kind of appreciates the greatness of Golden State based on Steph, Draymond, Clay, you know, Steve Kerr. They all built it up together. You jumped on it. You know, you jumped on it. You made them a super team that could not be penetrated, could not be beat. And people pointed out that they didn't like that. And you took it personally as opposed to saying, I don't care if you don't like it. You know, what's that saying? Like, lions don't concern themselves with the opinions of sheep. Act like a lion. You're Kevin Durant. But he doesn't, and he never really has. And that's, you know, one of the pillars of dislike with Brooklyn. James Harden, I always appreciated the kind of lifestyle of Harden. I've always liked the way he plays. Again, thoroughly entertaining. Old school throwback parties all the time, shows up to play. That, up until about 3 weeks ago, was something I supported and something I liked. I can't be a supporter of the way he went out in Houston. I just can't. It was a sabotage. He cut him out at the knees, sandbagging 101, and now he's trying to claim like he didn't do that and he loves Houston. He gave it everything he possibly could. It's ridiculous. And then Kyrie Irving is Kyrie Irving. Like, it just it's such an unlikable big three in Brooklyn. But it's captivating.
Kyrie Irving, I've tried to – because we've been very careful because – and you pointed this out multiple times, and I want to continue to point it out. Like, if this was – something behind the scenes, like a mental health issue or something like that, then you know, you're very mindful and respectful of it. It doesn't seem like that. It just seems like he's a flat-out idiot. Mm-hmm. And that's what's concerning and frustrating because, you know, the other night, I kind of chuckled when I saw it because it was pointed out, like, this guy's on a Zoom. His team is playing.
He's playing
on a Zoom sitting sideways in a chair, like, staring into space.
Yeah.
Like, he has to know that that's going to get out there. Like, unless he's the dumbest human alive,
no,
which I believe he is.
I think he's aware. I think he knows.
Yeah, I think he just doesn't care.
I don't think he really cares, and now he's going to miss another game tomorrow because he's not going to play. Those are the reports anyway. But at some point, he's going to get back. And watching this science experiment is going to be fascinating. It's going to be incredible TV, must-see TV. And I give Brooklyn credit for going all in and trying it. I hope it fails. I have no interest in seeing it prevail, but I'll be watching constantly. And I am quite interested to see how it all plays out. Scott Mitchell will join us, our Jays reporter. DJ LeMahieu is back with the Yankees, signing a six-year deal at $90 million. The reports are out there. They were leaked from somewhere. It was either the agent or the Blue Jays leaking the details of what the Jays were willing to offer or what they had on the table. If it was coming from the Jays, and it did come from the Jays, that to me is a horrible sign that they feel like they've got to get it out to the people. Hey, just so you know, we were legitimately in on this. That reeks of desperation. We'll see what Scotty can tell us about that and where they go from here. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, the NFL back in action this weekend. Al's brother will be on the clock in the next hour. I think the O-Dog will join us as well for that, just to make sure everything's on the up and up, right? He just wants to make sure he keeps Al's brother in check, and that's reasonable. I understand where he's coming from. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif will join us in about 20 minutes as well, so that's going to be great to catch up with him. We look forward to that. And don't forget, the final hour is coming up on TSN 2, and we'll continue here on TSN Radio. So DJ LeMahieu signs with the Yankees today, 6 years, $90 million. Not even remotely surprising. He has made it abundantly clear since the start of this process he wanted to be back in New York. And history would tell us if a player wants to stay with the Yankees and the Yankees want to keep him, then he's a Yankee. You know, like it's very simple. This is probably where it was always going. But the Jays were in on it, you know, surprisingly. they were in on it. They're in on everybody. And what's different about this is the details have leaked on what the Jays were willing to offer him. 4 years at around $78 million. I have not seen those type of details out there before. Here's Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. If that's coming from the Jays, Scotty, if they're the ones leaking the details on what they offered LeMahieu, what do you make of that?
I don't think that's coming from the Jays, but I do think that's an accurate number. And when you look at it, the AAV is higher than New York, and you know, you hit the nail on the head. It was always kind of a foregone conclusion that he was probably going back to the Yankees after a little bit of a back and forth just because of how well he fits that ballpark and what he's done in his 2 years there. And, you know, obviously the Yankees are a team that, you know, has World Series aspirations. So it makes a whole lot of sense. And, you know, when you look at 6 years, he had a figure in mind in terms of $90 million. He wanted to hit that threshold, and he took a little bit of an AAV hit on it because he wanted to get that one big contract. And you know, it kind of makes sense. And this isn't anything from the Blue Jays' perspective that they did or didn't do to get this guy. They were interested. They were interested 2 years ago in free agency. And, you know, the interest on his side, you know, was probably not the same as the two New York teams. But I also don't think it's a case of LeMahieu and his agent completely leveraging the Blue Jays and pulling the wool over their eyes in this scenario. So it's just one of those cases where the fit was New York and the player and team both wanted him, and the Blue Jays are the team on the outside looking in.
Well, how cognizant are they of that, of being used in leverage? Because they're coming up, you know, as the second place team in a lot of these scenarios. At some point, they got to think that's probably happening. They've been around baseball for a long time. It goes both ways. They've used other teams too. But if Lindor, they were in on it, just missed. Hendricks, in on it, just missed. You know, LeMahieu, at some point, they're probably a little bit concerned about that.
Yeah, look, Ross Atkins has talked about that on the record. And, you know, when we talk about, we have months and weeks to talk about, you know, all the ins and outs of negotiations, because it's not a situation like the NFL or the NHL where it's defined targets and you go out on July 1 and kind of make those moves quickly. And he has talked about that on the record, of interest being real and being able to feel that. And, you know, I think as a general manager and someone who's been in baseball and a very aware and bright guy, you know, I would think that they would be able to figure that out and not be leveraged. And, you know, you mentioned the Lindor thing. That's a trade situation, and they put together a package that they were willing to part with, and the Indians simply took another deal. And, you know, you could always say, should you sweeten? But, you know, when you got to sign a guy for $300 million and you get one season out of him and you're giving up prospects, it's a tough deal to engineer. And when you look at the situation of what they're in right now, is the top three free agents are still on the board. Trevor Bauer and George Springer, who I've been talking about since last March as the obvious fit for this ball club in so many ways, they're still complete options at this point, and you just can't assess an offseason until it's over. And when there's 85% of the free agents on the board, yeah, some teams are going to use the Blue Jays as leverage, or try to, because of they've been on the record saying they're one of the few teams in baseball that wants to spend, but you have to give them the benefit when people are real and when people aren't. And when you look at the options that are still out there, the best fits for the Blue Jays are still on the board, and they're just being prudent with their spending, because there's an opportunity cost to everything. If you go out and try to lay down for DJ LeMahieu, and then all of a sudden George Springer doesn't become an option because of that, you know, you got to weigh these things. And I think that the best fits are still out there. I think Liam Hendricks would have been an awful investment at that sort of price when they've been able to build bullpens for cheap. When you look at this offseason, I think it's George Springer still, and, you know, that's a complete possibility as of today.
Scott, we used to play on this show a game called Jerry's Percentages. We retired.
We still do. Semi-retired.
Occasionally, yeah, it's semi-retired. Okay. But if you had to put a percentage on it, then you just talked about, you know, the Blue Jays being methodical. If you had to put a percentage on the confidence that they are going to land one of the three that you just named, where would that be?
I mean, 50-50 at this point. You know, I can't, I've got to couch this, just because, I mean, to be a fly on the wall in these negotiations, it's a tough sell. I mean, you know, there's always the border involved. You know, Toronto has always been looked at a little bit differently with, you know, it's understandable for Americans looking at it in that way. And, you know, when you look at the uncertainty, you may have to spend a little more. We saw it with Hyunjin Ryu last year, and you just don't really know the interest. You can look at the Lindor trade and say maybe that helps the Blue Jays in terms of maybe the Mets can't get to that number that Springer wants. But you can also look at it on the flip side and say maybe Springer really, really wants to be there now, because that ball club looks a whole lot better. But, you know, it's tough. I mean, Trevor Bauer has kind of alluded to the fact that he would be open to Toronto, and whether he's leveraging them, you know, I don't know, because there's a relationship with that front office and a lot of the analytical stuff and the way they do things a little bit creatively in terms of Bauer's camp and the Blue Jays. I think there could be a relationship there that would work. But, you know, when you look at it, it's tough, because next year's free agent market has a whole crop of shortstops that are absolute studs, you know, top 15 players in the game. And when you think about where the Blue Jays are right now, when you look at the San Diego Padres, you look at the Chicago White Sox, they are a year or two ahead of where the Blue Jays are at. And there's a real good reason they're going out and pushing a lot of their chips in. When you think about the Blue Jays, Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. have not played a full normal season yet. And you're going to learn a lot about this ball club in 2021 if they're able to get through 162 games. Is Bo Bichette your starting shortstop for the foreseeable future? You're probably going to know that on October 5th of this year. So there's a lot of reasons to be patient with this. And I think if they come out with one of these guys, it's a great offseason for them. If they don't, people are going to be disappointed. But you have to look at the other names on the market, players like James Paxton, guys that could help in other ways that maybe aren't those splashy type moves. But there's a whole lot of alternatives and ways they can go about this. And I just think with the names on the board, you just have to be patient.
Yeah, but the fact that they're in on these deals, Scotty, would not indicate that they are. Like, they wanted LeMahieu, and they didn't get him. They wanted Lindor. They put a package together. You know, like, I'm not going to accept at the end of this saying, it's fine. This was what we wanted. No, it's not. They were in on these guys. They didn't get them. They can't claim patience by the end of this and say, well, we're building for 2022 when you were in on it. You just didn't get the guys.
Yeah, it's completely fair to look at it that way. And like I just said, I think that's more of a case of the Padres and White Sox being teams that are willing to go that extra mile just because of where they're set up in their contention window. And those two teams are clear and obvious World Series contenders, heading into this season. I think you would put them in probably the top five of no matter how you list those teams with the Dodgers and and Yankees and teams like that. So I think, you know, there's just has to be a little bit more of a patient approach from the Blue Jays. And I think, the frustration of hearing, you know, they're in, they're all in, they came second. You have to think about agents working hard because they weren't in on all of these guys in terms of top targets. You're in on a lot of guys throughout an MLB offseason, and I still believe the true target is still on the board and still a complete option. And when you look at some of the other guys like Kluber, you add somebody like that, this offseason could get real intriguing in a hurry with a couple of transactions. So I do get the frustration on one hand, but I also think that, you know, hearing that they're in and they missed is a little bit of a misnomer because those are agents working hard to attack their clients, the teams with money.
Yep, it's still early enough, to your point. There's still other guys out there. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, Scotty.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Here's Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif will join us in the next hour. Al's brother and the O-Dog back on the clock as well with the NFL games on the slate. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, online, tsn1050.ca.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Acceptedated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.